I met Roberta Kreider exactly 5 years ago. It's probably within just a few days of exactly 5 years ago. She and I did a workshop together at a conference in DeKalb, Illinois called WOW 2000, and the WOW stood for Witness Our Welcome. It was a conference of the Ecumenical Church Movement. That was our first meeting. But prior to that, I was on a journey of trying to understand why my daughter took her life and why she was a lesbian. And part of my journey included reading many, many books. And our faith journey has done a 180 since our daughter died to full acceptance, affirmation, and total love for all GLBT people. Many times people ask me, when was it that you kind of turned the corner when you really knew that your beliefs had changed? And I say to them, I can tell you exactly where I was, exactly what day it was, and exactly what was the clincher. I was in Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, on vacation, sitting out on the beach, trying to finish Roberta Kreider's book, From Wounded Hearts, Faith Stories of Lesbian, Gay, Bisexual, and Transgender People and Those Who Love Them. And I came screaming into this little room, apartment, motel room, and saying to Bob, I get it! I get it! They're wonderful, wonderful people. And God loves them just the way He loves me. And so it was Roberta's book that kicked me the rest of the way over to full affirmation and acceptance. So it gives me great, great pleasure to introduce a very, very special dear friend, and you all are going to be so blessed tonight, you aren't even going to believe it. Roberta.
Thank you, that'll be fine. I asked him to move that back for a very special reason. My husband and I had a little bit of a debate. He didn't want to sit over there. He said, boy, this echoes. Is this okay? He said, but I can't look at you when you're talking if I'm clear over there. And so I'm going to invite him if he wants to. He can come to the middle right now. But after a while, he's going to be up here for a little bit. But anyhow, and so I thought, well, if he's going to stay over there for sure, and I like to look into your faces too, and so I wanted that pulled back a little ways. It's really a great privilege to be here tonight and to look into your faces and to share with you from my heart. But before I do that, I would like to talk to God, and I ask you to join me, please. Eternal God, your wisdom encompasses all truth. Truly, you are God, and there is none to compare with you. Thank you for revealing yourself to us in Jesus. Thank you for being present to fellowship with us, not only today, but every day of our lives. Please give us great wisdom and genuine humility, so that we do not destroy each other with our truth. Empower the words that we will speak to one another this evening so that they may bring healing and hope to all who hear. May your kingdom come and your will be done on earth as it is in heaven. For yours alone is the kingdom and the power and the glory forever and ever. Amen. I believe that our stories are our most valuable treasure. When you and I can listen to each other's stories without judgment and with compassion, we empower each other to claim who we are and to do the best that we can to live up to our Creator's design for us. Truth never changes, but our perception of truth continues to change. Discovering truth is a lifelong process, and I'm thankful that our Creator is available to guide us in our search. As I share a part of my faith journey with you this evening, I hope that you will be able to see how the Spirit of God has guided me to the truth that I espouse today. The Bible story from chapter 9 of the Gospel of John has impacted my life in a powerful way. I see similarities in this story to what is happening in many churches today, and I would like to share some excerpts with you. As Jesus walked along, he saw a man blind from birth. His disciples asked him, "Rabbi, who sinned, this man or his parents, that he was born blind?" Jesus answered, "Neither this man nor his parents sinned. He was born blind so that God's works might be revealed in him." After Jesus healed the man's eyes, he was brought before the Jewish authorities to give an account of how he had received his sight. But the authorities would not believe his story. So they called his parents and asked them, "Is this your son who you say was born blind? How then does he now see?" His parents answered, "We know that this is our son and that he was born blind, but we do not know how it is that now he sees, nor do we know who opened his eyes. Ask him. He is of age. He will speak for himself." His parents said this because they were afraid of the Jewish authorities, because the authorities had already agreed that anyone who confessed Jesus to be the Messiah would be put out of the synagogue. Therefore, his parents said, "He is of age. Ask him." So, for a second time, they called the man who had been blind. Is that me doing that? And,
I think those microphones need to be turned off.
And said to him, "Give glory to God. We know that this man is a sinner." He answered, "I do not know whether he is a sinner. One thing I do know, that though I was blind, now I see." They said to him, "What did he do to you? How did he open your eyes?" He answered them, "I have told you already, and you would not listen. Why do you want to hear it again? Do you also want to become his disciples?" Then they reviled him, saying, "You are his disciple. We are disciples of Moses. We know that God has spoken to Moses, but as for this man, we don't know where he comes from." The man answered, "Here is an astonishing thing. You do not know where he comes from, and yet he opened my eyes. Never since the world began has it been heard that anyone opened the eyes of a person born blind. If this man were not from God, he could do nothing." They answered him, "You were born entirely in sins, and are you trying to teach us?" And they drove him out. Jesus heard that they had driven him out, and when he found him, he said to him, "Do you believe in the Son of Man?" He answered, "And who is he, sir? Tell me, so that I may believe in him." He answered, "You have seen him, and the one who is speaking with you is he." He said, "Lord, I believe," and he worshiped him. Jesus said, "I came into this world for judgment, so that those who do not see may see, and those who do see may become blind. Some of the Pharisees standing near heard this and said to him, "Surely we are not blind, are we?" Jesus said to them, "If you were blind, you would not have sinned. But now that you say, 'We see,' your sin remains." I was one of those people who could see. I could see what was wrong with other people if they did not measure up to the traditions of my church. I knew what the Bible said because my church instructed me well. I was taught that it was a sin to cut my hair, a sin to have insurance, especially life insurance, a sin for a woman to preach, a sin to wear a ring to symbolize the love that my husband and I have for each other. And the list goes on. I remember when my brother, just older than I, invited me to go with him and his friends to the Kansas State Fair. This was very exciting to me because he had never before invited me to activities with his friends. On the Sunday prior to the fair, our minister's sermon included a warning against the worldly sin of attending the fair. My brother was very frustrated with me when I told him that I could not go. I don't remember that he ever again invited me to activities with his friends. And I worried about his soul because he did not obey the authorities of our church. In our adult years, we learned to appreciate each other again. And my anxiety for him was relieved to see how deeply involved he is in his own Mennonite congregation. Ironically, we're in two different camps again today. Though we always are glad to see each other on those few times we can be together, Russell is puzzled and perhaps a bit worried because of some of the changes that he sees in my life. The definition of sin keeps changing. All of the things that I just mentioned are no longer considered sin, with the exception of women in ministry. There are still some congregations in our Mennonite church who keep women subservient to men and will not allow them to serve in leadership positions. I believe that the biblical definition of sin is anything that breaks fellowship with our Creator and harms or destroys God's creation.
Amen.
For me, to do anything to harm or demean you is sin. Homosexuality was a word that I seldom heard, yet somehow I was sure it was sin. The way I read my Bible assured me of this. The words gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgender were not common in my vocabulary. We didn't have people like that in our family, so we didn't have to deal with it. For 58 years, I did not need to think often about homosexuality. Then one day, in June of 1984, my youngest brother entered the hospital for tests. We thought it strange that though he needed to stay for weeks, we were never given a diagnosis or a prognosis of his disease. I usually called him on Saturdays, and when it became evident that he was dying and wanted us to come, Harold and I drove from our home in eastern Pennsylvania to Chicago to comfort him and tell him goodbye. What a shock it was to hear from his own lips, "I have AIDS, and I have no one to blame but myself." Then he added wistfully, as if he wished we could understand, but doubted that we could, "My sexual fantasies have always been with men." My emotions were in a turmoil, but I'm thankful that in all that traumatic time, those words, my sexual fantasies have always been with men, were burned indelibly into my memory. Ray came out to us as a gay man only 2 weeks before he died. We were allowed 2 short visits with him that weekend before we needed to travel to our home again. Oh, how much I wanted to ask him, how much I needed to learn from him. It seemed a cruel irony that he had to go before he could help me to understand. For 10 long years, I wallowed in the pain and the shame of my brother's death. I prayed that God would send homosexuals to me so that I could help them change. I read, I questioned people, and tried to determine what happened to change my brother so drastically from the sibling I thought I knew. Everything I read enforced the judgment that homosexuality is a learned experience, a chosen one. So even though it was my brother whom I loved, I came out stronger and stronger against all homosexuality. For me, the Bible said it, I believed it, but that did not settle it. Soon after Ray's death, I became aware of how homosexuality and AIDS were talked about more frequently in the news media. I was forced to think about my brother's death almost every day, and a word new to me in this context drew my attention: gay. In my pain and loss, I couldn't see anything gay about homosexuality. I began to be fearful of the time when this matter might come before our church body. I was afraid that my own congregation might decide to accept non-celibate homosexuals as members, and then what would I do? I even worried that my husband might go with the majority and I would have to make a different decision. And then what would we do? To be true to God, would I have to go to another congregation? Would Harold and I grow apart? When delegates to our Franconia Mennonite District Conference discovered that Germantown Mennonite Church had members living in same-gender relationships, homosexuality suddenly became a front burner concern and escalated into over 2 years of debate about what to do with Germantown. At that time, retired ministers were still considered delegates to conference, so Harold was one of the people who was expected to vote. When we realized that this controversy was coming to a head, we both agreed that it is not fair to vote about other people's lives when we have not listened to their stories and learned to know them. So we began to diligently seek out resources that presented the other side of the debate, and we went to Germantown to learn to know the people there. We also attended a Brethren Mennonite Connecting Families weekend and were surprised to meet a couple there who we already knew. We had been members of the same congregation when we lived in another state. But the biggest surprise of all was to meet Mennonite ministers and other leaders who were there to support their gay sons and lesbian daughters. Listening to the family stories that weekend was a big eye-opener for us. Peggy Campola was the guest speaker that weekend, and our friendship with her blossomed and has continued strong ever since. About 6 weeks later, another opportunity to learn more about the truth we were seeking was given to us when Dr. Ralph Blair called to invite us to an Evangelicals Concerned weekend at Kirkridge, which isn't far from our home. That weekend, I was a minority in three ways. I am a woman, and there were only seven women there. I am not gay, and as near as we could tell, there were only seven of us there. And I am a Mennonite, and only two of us were at the conference. When we arrived, we were given name tags with a number in the corner. Harold's number was different from mine. As we gathered in the dining hall for the evening meal, we were told that the numbers represented our family groups for the weekend. And for that first meal, we were going to eat together as families to get acquainted. Can you imagine my consternation when I looked around and all I could see were men? Gay men everywhere. I felt panicky when I realized that Harold was going to eat at another table. And I thought, oh God, I want to learn, but this is really a threat. But you know, God could see ahead to this day, and I think there might have been a divine chuckle to think of all the surprises that were in store for me. And you know what? When I got to my table, God had already worked it out because there was one woman there in my group. It was a wonderful weekend. On Sunday morning, as we sat quietly waiting for the Quaker-style service to begin, I wished much that we could bring all the delegates from our conference to an EC weekend, two by two, and let them be a minority, just like we were, among people who evidently enjoyed worshiping God together. Excuse me a minute, I've got to wet my whistle. It's too long a story to tell you of all the ways that we felt God's Spirit pushing us on. Often I became fearful and started to draw back. The old tapes played over and over in my head, bringing back to haunt me all the clobber passages from the Bible that I had used on other people. I often cried out to God for affirmation, for guidance, and for the assurance that I was not going astray or leading other people astray. And always I received the assurance I needed, sometimes in some very unexpected ways. One night I was awakened at 3 a.m. with the words, 14 reasons, 14 reasons, just running through my mind. I became wide awake and asked, Lord, do I really have 14 reasons? And then the reasons began to come swiftly. And I knew there would be no more sleep for me that night until I got up and wrote them down. When morning dawned, I looked at the reasons, but I didn't feel like putting flesh on them. A day or two later, it became like fire in my bones. I sat down to write, and the words poured out quite easily. I thought of another reason to include and titled the article, 15 Reasons Why I Have Changed My Mind. I was blessed by writing this article, but now, what should I do with it? I had to face head on just how far I was going to come out of my closet. Did I really have the courage to try to get it published? Because no one would publish my 15 reasons, I said to God, I believe you gave this message to me, but no one will publish it, and I don't know what to do with it, so I'll just give it back to you to do whatever you wish. Then I felt led to make copies to give to interested people. When I gave a copy to one of my friends, he asked if he could make copies, and later he asked if he could put it on the internet. And that was scary. I told him about my agreement with God and said, you may do whatever you feel would be helpful. After I was permitted to share my story with my church family, I gave him a copy of that also, and he put the two articles together in a little lavender booklet that is distributed by our local PFLAG. You probably all know, but for those of you who don't, PFLAG is an organization of parents, families, and friends of lesbians and gays. And now we have expanded it to include transgenders as well. We work together to promote justice and equality for these misunderstood and mistreated individuals. And we try to help families cope with the shock when their lesbian daughters and gay sons come out to them. It seemed very unfair to Harold and I that in over 2 years of debate in our church conference about what to do with Germantown, never once was a gay or lesbian individual or any of their family members invited to share their faith stories. It was always a discussion about them. In my own experience, learning to know these people and listening to their stories brought a completely different perspective to the dialogue. Telling the stories became very important to me, and I began to believe that God was asking me to provide a forum where my friends could tell their stories. Now there are 3 books with over 100 faith stories. From Wounded Hearts, the one that Mary Lou talked about, this is the 2nd edition of it, was first published in 1998 by Cairo Press. It went out of print while I was working on Together in Love, and so I thought, well, okay, I guess I'll just let it go out of print. I don't have time to tell you now about what happened, that I decided that no, I had to update it. And so I did, and I added 4 new stories. One of them is a chapter by my husband on navigating change. And 7 of the 11 authors who were anonymous the first time around were glad to have their names on the byline. And some of them said, I'm so glad you did it again, because I was so sorry that I didn't come out the first time. So that was good that we could do it that way. And then in 2002, I worked on Together in Love, Faith Stories of Gay, Lesbian, Bisexual, and Transgender People. No, couples. And that came out in 2002. This one, I didn't tell you the subtitle to it, but it's Faith Stories of Lesbian, Gay, Bisexual, and Transgender People and Those Who Love Them. And then last year, I worked on this story. And if you want to know how I came about doing this book, you'll have to read my acknowledgments in the book. Till I was done updating this one, for just in time for the last WOW meeting, I thought, I'll never do another book in my life. But before that conference was over, this one was already starting to be born. So that was amazing to me how God worked all that out. The first 2 books are ecumenical and contain stories from many of the mainline denominations and some from the Jewish faith. This one is a more narrow book because it is written, it has stories from our own Mennonite and Brethren Anabaptist heritage. And the title of this book is The Cost of Truth, Faith Stories of Mennonite and Brethren Leaders and Those Who Might Have Been. Sorry, my mouth keeps getting dry. After the first book was published, I had an amazing experience. Surprising to me. I don't know if I've heard, I guess I've heard Mary Lou tell that about the book before too, but anyhow, there was a group of people called the Damascus Road Team, and this was composed of members from different Mennonite congregations who came to our church to give us a series of teachings on people of color and how they're still being marginalized. It was difficult to sit there and hear words that are also true of people we love dearly, but the church does not welcome. One evening, the speakers kept talking about seeing the face of God in people of color. One of the speakers was a black brother who I was quite sure would not agree with my point of view. When the meeting ended, I thought that I needed to talk to this brother, but other people were surrounding him, I was getting tired, and I thought, oh, I don't need to talk to him. I'm going to go home, and then I saw him standing alone. Before I could let my fears hold me down, I walked up to him and said, Ted, I agree with what you said this evening, and I do see the face of God in people of color. But I need to ask you a question about people who are also dear to me. Do you see the face of God in lesbian and gay people? He answered, I'm beginning to look at that differently now. And then his face lit up and he said, are you the person who put that book together? When I assured him that I was the editor of From Wounded Hearts, he said, well, that is why I'm looking at it differently now, because of the stories in that book. In the 10 years that I wanted God to bring gay people to me so that I could help them change, not even one came for my help. I did not know that what I so earnestly desired for them was the very thing that would drive them to despair and could lead them to AIDS or suicide or both. God showed me how blind I was with my way of seeing biblical truth. Truly, I was one of those people who said, I see, but I didn't know how blind I was. Now that I have allowed God to help me change my attitude, there are many gay and lesbian brothers and sisters, and some bisexual and transgender ones, who are a part of my life. Some of their parents are also our dear friends. I thank God for the diversity of God's creation and for the joy that I have in being a part of the lives of such beautiful, sensitive, and loving individuals. Listen to these welcome words from Jesus. Come to me, all you who are weary and are carrying heavy burdens, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am gentle and humble in heart, and you will find rest for your souls. For my yoke is easy and my burden is light. This is the invitation of our Creator, who calls every one of us, my beloved, my dear, precious child. Come to me, all you who have been scorned and rejected by the church and by society. Come, every one of you whose parents have disowned you. Come, all you parents with hearts full of pain. Come, every homophobic person. Come, be yoked with me. Learn from me. As I walk with Jesus through the pages of the gospel message, I see God's life in him as he reached out to touch the outcast lepers and heal them. He called Zacchaeus to come down from his hiding place in the tree because he wanted to eat with this despised sinner. Jesus set aside the taboos imposed by the law-bound religious leaders of his day. He ignored the rules of proper conduct when he had a conversation with a sexually impure Samaritan woman. The way Jesus lived was an example of what it means to love one another as God has loved us. The only harshness that I see in Jesus was with those who thought they had all the answers and could exclude those who were different. God knows that no human being is perfect, but our Creator invites us all to open our hearts and receive God's amazing grace. You're such wonderful listeners. I thank you for listening to my story. And soon it will be your turn to share your thoughts or questions. But before that, I want you to meet a very important person in my life. I want you to meet my partner, my lover, my friend, Harold. Next spring, we hope to celebrate 60 years together. If he wouldn't come and share a few words with you, because it's not fair for me to do all the talking. And so he's going to share his testimony, and then when he's through with that, by then we'll hear from you.
Every time I listen to the bird speak, my emotions, they kill me. So I don't know how I'll get through this tonight. Will you pray for me? The issue of homosexuality, in my experience, parallels what Roberta has already shared with you. I believe very strongly that in our retirement years, God has led the two of us into the most fruitful years of our ministry. Never in our former years of pastoral work could I have envisioned what we would be involved in the work that we so much enjoy today. Throughout most of my life, I regarded homosexuality as a disgusting sin. You are probably wondering then, how in the world could I make such a turnaround? I will share some significant life-changing experiences with you. First, we made a deliberate effort to meet gay and lesbian people so that we could learn from them. After they had assured us it was not our intent to condemn them, they were willing then to share their stories of painful rejection by people close to them and to tell us about the shame and loathing of self that were their constant companions. Their personal stories made my heart weep many times as they disclosed their need to hide their true self identity from their families and other significant people in their lives. I became convinced that they did not choose to be homosexual. Rather, they wrestled with what to do with the raw material they had been given for their lives, their longing and search for God and acceptance were very evident. After learning to know gay and lesbian, bisexual and transgender people, and realizing their desire to do God's will and to be included in their commitment of faith, I needed to rearrange my understanding of God. I came to believe that my vision of God's grace was severely limited. The Gospels of the Christian Bible tell the story of Jesus, who included all people in his ministry. No one was turned away. Today, I view God through the lens and life and ministry of Jesus. I came to realize that GLBT people have the same social, spiritual, and psychological needs that I have. their desire for acceptance, love, and intimacy is the same as that of heterosexual people. I have seen the wounds of intense pain in the hearts of many GLBT people who have been rejected by their families, childhood friends, and communities of faith. Is there anything more distressing than being discriminated against and denied the freedom to live openly as your true self? Regardless of who you are, I believe there is deep within each of us an amazing inner sanctuary of the soul, a holy place where you and I can meet our divine creator, who loves us more than any of us can comprehend. To be accepted by God is worth more than anything in this life. Roberta and I know something of the pain of being rejected by people we love. We are family members who do not understand our need to be advocates for GLBT people. One of our daughters and her family, who live in the apartments of ours, see what we are doing as sin. Last March, Roberta and I were asked to speak in three Mennonite churches in Harrisonburg, Virginia. On the morning of our departure, as we were finishing last-minute jobs and packing, our son-in-law came downstairs to give us each a hug and wish us a safe trip. He turned to leave, but stopped at the door, turned around and said, I need to tell you though, that your reason for going to Harrisonburg is very wrong. You're like wolves in sheep's clothing. You've been deceived and are deceiving others with your message. Understand, we have not told our son-in-law or his family why we're going to Virginia. But he was sure that he knew. We were shocked by his words, and I'm unable to describe the expression of pain and anguish in the words and his expression, his facial expression. As I remember, the only thing that I could respond by saying to him was, thank you for telling us how you feel. That's all that I said in response. But a few seconds after he left, an amazing thing happened. The sun broke through the clouds. I was standing at the kitchen sink washing up the breakfast dishes. It had been cloudy all morning, but the sun broke through those clouds and shone directly on me with its full blaze. And I had to think in my heart, God, what are you saying? I believe you are saying, I'm sending you on a mission, Harold. I will be with you. And you will be a blessing to the GLBT community. Do not be afraid. Then the clouds covered the sun, and we never saw it again until we were well on our journey to Harrisonburg, Virginia. A 260-mile drive We are thankful that we have been able to live in a loving relationship with our daughter and her family in spite of our differences and the times that they feel they need to express harsh words and for our involvement with gay and lesbian, bisexual, transgender people. Many of our siblings and other extended family members do not understand why we have changed our views. They have sent some painful messages to us. Some church colleagues give us the cold shoulder. However, we are grateful that our daughter and her family who live in Oregon support us and understand that it is important to be in solidarity with our GLBT people, friends. They have friends who are gay and lesbian and feel very close to them. In fact, our youngest daughter, Bonnie, is sending us $100 a month to be able to send a free copy of The Cost of Truth to Mennonite and Brethren pastors. The Brethren and I feel very certain that God has called us to share God's love and grace with everyone. And the joy that we experience in our friendship with people who are marginalized by society and church institutions more than compensate for the pain of rejection that we sometimes must endure. Many of our dearest friends are gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgender people. We believe strongly that God has given us the mandate to show compassion to discouraged and troubled souls wherever and whomever they may be. We try to ease the heavy burden of guilt which they carry unnecessarily because of people in their lives who seem unable to see the damage their judgmental and abusive words inflict upon them. People who profess to love. I believe, and Roberta believes, that the good news of God's unending love for everyone takes away the burden of guilt for all of us. May God be praised. It is such a joy and pleasure to be with you tonight.
Thank you. Now you see how long-winded we are. We didn't leave very much time, and I have a few words to say in the end. So tell us quick what you want to say. Do you have any questions or anything you want to share?
Yeah. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
My name's Tracy. It was June of 1995, about that time. I was the assistant pastor of a Mennonite church when I came out. And the community of faith that called me into ministry, that affirmed me, also shunned me. Mm-hmm. And it was July of 1995 that I was introduced to EC, where I was told about the love of God, and where I was affirmed and appreciated for what God has called me and who God has called me to be. And I encourage you to keep telling the story, because the stories are what change people. It's when we tell our stories that people are changed. and they will listen to you. And thank you so much, because there are Mennonites everywhere who know the pain that you're talking about, but who also know what you're talking about of the 180 of what God can do. And I just want to thank you.
Thank you. Looks like Carol and I aren't too big of a minority this time. There's a few more Mennonites than two. Anyone else back here?
Okay, I'm a Mennonite too, I guess.
At least you have connections, don't you, Berlin?
Yeah, that's my family background on both sides of my family was Mennonite. And I don't really have a question as much. I want to thank you as well for this message that you've given and for the books that you've compiled. I have a dear friend who wrote one of the stories in your book, and I know she was proud to be able to do that, so thank you.
I'll have to hear who that one was. I want to tell you that I didn't have room in my suitcase to bring more than one copy of each book. But Peter Benson said that he does have copies of this one, and we'll have them available back in the Resource Center tomorrow so that you can look at them, and we'll put some order blanks there so that if you really want them, you can get them. And I just must tell you about these books real quickly, because I don't know if any of you have read if grace is true, why God will save every person. And this one is written by the same two Quaker pastors. One grew up Catholic and one Protestant. And they weren't either, I don't think either one of them grew up to be Quakers, but they're Quaker ministers now. This one is If God is Love, Rediscovering Grace in an Ungracious World. And I thank God for leading me to these books. Someone might say, oh, so you're going to look at those now instead of the Bible. No, these don't take the place of the Bible, but they surely help me to understand the Bible a whole lot better than I ever did, and I'm a much happier person since I have learned a lot more about God's grace. And you know, if I wouldn't have opened my heart and searched to know the truth about gay and lesbian people, I wouldn't be as happy as I am today. Now, I think we have 1 minute left. So I'll have to cut you off, I guess, but we hope to be here the whole weekend, so you can come and talk to us, and we'll be happy to hear whatever stories we can hear. I love to hear your stories. I have one little short story I want to tell you yet. Some years ago, a young university student told me that his parents have not rejected him, but they do not accept the whole of who he is, a gay man with a gay life partner. He said that he believes that the best way to help them understand is to live confidently in his own experience with God. When they see him radiating God's presence in his life, he hopes that they will eventually be convinced that God has accepted him. And now I want to leave you with this challenge. Accept who you are with no apologies. Enjoy your own uniqueness. Respect and nurture the uniqueness of others. And live with freedom and joy as you explore the way to become all you were sent into the world to be. If, by the grace of God, we can each live up to the potential given to us, we can stand together and make this world a better and a safer place for all people. May God bless you all and give you wisdom, courage, and strength for your journey. Thank you for letting me speak to you tonight.